to Progressive Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Linda DeVillers is my guest. She hasn't been on for a while because she's had schedule conflicts, but I'm so glad she's back. Hello, Dr. Linda.
Hi there. Great to talk to you.
And to you. So you have two books, and we've talked about both of them on this program before, but we're going to circle back to your book called Simple Sexy Food 101, Tasty Aphrodisiac Recipes and Sensual Tips to Stir Your Libido and Feed Your Love. And I wrote the foreword to it, and I just love your book. And I hope it's still available, I'm certain. Tell us where it's available.
Actually, it's available exclusively on my own website, which is okay. DrLindaDeVillers.com.
DrLindaDeVillers.com.
Correct.
So I just had a really good idea, Linda.
What's
and that is that I will go to your website and buy several for Christmas gifts.
Oh, that would be great.
I know. I was thinking about that, and I don't know why I didn't think about it before. I mean, I wrote the foreword, but more than that, it's just such a wonderful book. It's so stimulating. So I have to think about, I've already come up with my brother and his partner, because they like to cook, and they're very much in love. And so I have to think about people that would really respond to this book. I think there are many, actually.
You know, one of the things I've discovered, I sometimes say it's really two books in one. And when I say that, it's because, as you know, I cover a full 101 aphrodisiac foods in the first half, based on, you know, really careful research about both the lore and the what I call sexy nutrients that really enhance sexual interest and function. And then the second half of the book is recipes. So what I found is that there's some people who really don't cook anymore. And, I mean, it's a disappointment, but they're not that interested in the recipe part, but they're really interested in the, you know, the whole aphrodisiac part. I remember one tennis friend bought it, and she said she stayed up till 2 in the morning reading, you know, you don't read recipes for 3 hours, but she read the first half of the book, which was, you know, sort of enlightening to me.
Well, of course, and that is a wonderful aspect of your book, that you give all these sensual tips. I mean, you can get so much out of this book. We're going to talk about the book and maybe even some of the sensual tips. But I wanted to say that I said a couple of things in the foreword to your book, Simple Sexy Food.
Which I'm very grateful.
Oh, I know, and it was my pleasure to write it. But I started it by saying, I'm just going to read a little bit of it, not much, sure. to sort of advance us to other topics. So it was the summer of 1991 when Linda DeVillers and I first met in Amsterdam at the World Congress of Sexology. We enjoyed sessions and field trips and colleagues noticing at once we were women of appetites, not at all afraid to feed our hunger.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And so the other part that I wanted to read from my foreword was that the taste treats in this book are key elements to the art of seduction, leading to lust and then to love. Simple Sexy Food is part aphrodisiac cooking manual and part sensual self-help, and that's what we just talked about. Yeah. I mean, it's a really practical and sexy guide for a lot of people.
I think so, and it's such an antidote to the what I call the mindless approach to eating. You know, people just sort of shove food in their mouth, and they put the wrong things in their mouth, and they're not attentive at all.
Well, and there is a connection, of course, with mindless sex too. A lot of women, in particular, have trouble being in the moment, so the mindfulness is really important with eating and with sex. And if you think about it, the bond between food and sensual pleasure is the first thing we learn at birth. Exactly. So from nursing to death, food and sex go hand in hand.
Yes, I agree.
Completely. Yeah. So, sexy foods are just their reputation. Sometimes it's a physical resemblance to genitals, oysters, bananas, and so on. But some foods, it seems like, immediately pique desire because of their wonderfully sensual quality. And perhaps you could.
One of the sensual foods that comes to mind, and I'm even looking at which ones are the most well known, and yet some of the things on the most well known list, I wouldn't call, do they just evoke that? I'm not sure, but the one that just struck me this afternoon as I was reviewing were mangoes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think about mangoes? They're just so juicy. They're soft. They're wet, and they're not. You know, they were not among the top 10 of the most well known, but they certainly, especially among certain groups, such as, for example, the Asians or Caribbeans, really value mangoes, and if I'm thinking Caribbean, papayas. They are
papayas,
they're known as, fruits of love.
Mm-hmm. And the mango is has so much intense fragrance and flavor, and of course, it's rich in vitamins, which is great because a lot of your foods in this book that you've so lovingly written but rich in vitamins, it's a base for many dishes, the mango in Asia and in Polynesia, where it's considered male food because of its resemblance to a testicle. And maybe given the size of mangoes, it's a bit of an exaggeration. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. I'm looking at my own work. The testicle part, I think of avocados immediately. But
well, sure.
Mangoes go back 5,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, anybody who's familiar with Indian food and thinking about mango chutneys and so forth, but certainly...
Oh, yeah.
Mango, fresh mango, is often integrated into a curry dish.
Right.
And, I happen to think it's a lovely fruit.
I remember reading years ago, Linda, that it, just as you peel a mango and then that there's still some of the fruit attached to the peel and that it feels like... Perhaps it feels like the inner labia.
That would make sense, sure.
Yeah. So, because we're going to move into what foods are the most widely known to be aphrodisiacs, and you say... The oysters are, but there are more than that. So talk about oysters.
In
and,
my,
and
My survey, and remember, this was a Southern California survey, so it's got its limitations. But if we think about it, if we start thinking about what do people really get on Valentine's Day and so forth, the good old strawberry landed up, as, in my survey, the very most well-known. And and then if we add the chocolate, which came in fourth in my survey, not first or second, but chocolate-covered strawberries are just such an interesting finger food, which adds to, I believe, their sensuality. You eat them with your hands. You can readily feed them to somebody.
Yeah, and that's really important for the whole aphrodisiac effect and maybe the eye contact as you feed your lover a strawberry.
And, you know, if I think about it, you know, and what adds to the sensuality, it's sort of where are you going to eat it? Now, a mango could be eaten all sorts of places, I suppose, but we do know that that stuff we're saying that's juicy and wonderful could also kind of make a mess. Chocolate strawberries could be taken to bed. There's just, you know, myriad places you could have chocolate-covered strawberries as part of the whole setting.
And those are easily fed one to the other. In fact, that's probably why so often at Valentine's Day there are chocolate-covered strawberries along with champagne, which came up on your survey pretty high, too, right?
Almost neck and neck with strawberries. You got it.
Okay.
And if it was, if we were asking beverages only, of course it was the number one beverage. But, yeah, there's something, you know, the champagne element in aphrodisiac, I think it's because it's more associated with specialness.
Good point.
Sometimes very romantic, or even a wedding, or an anniversary, or just good cheer, you know, New Year's Eve.
Good cheer.
The bubbles just are kind of tingly. And the glasses are special. You know, all sorts of things about champagne are special.
I've even suggested that couples take a bath together, warm bubble bath with oil in it, and that they drink some champagne. Now, for this next part of the exercise, it should not be necessarily very expensive champagne, but to pour some cold, bubbly champagne on the lover's, on her, his lover's breasts in the bathtub can be so sensual, because the sparkle and the cold contrasted with the hot and the bubbly. It's a real sensual experience.
I'm sure it is. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Other than, you have foods that are most widely known aphrodisiacs, so we have the oysters, we have the chocolate, we have the strawberries, what else?
Well, something sometimes people forget is more related to scent, cinnamon. I'm thinking as opposed to, you know, food, cinnamon and the scent of cinnamon, or maybe what it's associated with sometimes. I'm thinking of hot cross buns, although a hot toddy with cinnamon in it. People knew about cinnamon, which was a little surprising, but they did.
Yeah, and it feels, when you smell it, it's clean and spicy, and it just...
Right.
Yeah, it can be evocative of a number of things, and of course that's what we want. I'm sorry.
No, I said go ahead. I'm sorry, I started to say something.
Well, so you have chocolate in there, and...
there's a couple others left. Let me mention them to you. One that surprised me on my survey, and it is more widely viewed as an aphrodisiac by younger people under 35, was sushi. Sushi, you can feed each other, or there's something just a little unusual about it, you know. For all that we see it, and you know, that too brings up that whole idea of mindful versus mindless. Yes, you can go to the grocery store and just buy it and waffle it down, but it becomes a very different experience if you have, you know, attentively picked exactly the kind of sushi that you want, and maybe you have eaten it in a restaurant versus bringing it home. But mm-hmm. you can set the stage for the sushi and make it a very erotic experience. And the other one I have on my list are grapes. Grapes. And red grapes, yes. But I find them very special, and I think there's that poppy thing, and they've even got the word champagne in front of them. Mm-hmm. But champagne grapes are, a little more sophisticated, I don't know. There's something.
Yes.
And you can have a whole mouthful.
I mean, ever since Mark Anthony first fed Cleopatra grapes, the connection between sensual foods and romance and love have been intertwined. I mean, that's Mark Anthony and Cleopatra, right?
Right.
And I used to do, I've still suggested to some of my clients, but I remember years ago doing some group work where I had the couples slowly peel a grape.
Oh, right. That's a classic.
It's a classic. It's not original, but it works in terms of getting people to slow down, pay attention to the senses. So you peel a grape and you put it in your lover's mouth, your partner's mouth, and then the partner is obligated to first bite down on it slowly and swallow it, work it between the lips and the mouth and the tongue, and then slowly swallow it. Everything slowed down, but that is sensate focus that we as sex therapists think are so important for people to slow down and really pay attention.
Exactly. And two others, you mentioned the oysters in passing, and there's something I like to mention about oysters. I mean, I happen to be passionate about oysters. I've even been to oyster tasting sessions, you know, where you systematically taste the different kinds, and you even get served different wines to pair with them. But oysters are so well known. Historically, and if you ask somebody, if I talk to people about writing my book, and I'd say I'm writing a book about aphrodisiacs, 2/3 of the time the person, you mean about oysters? I mean, it was so, you know, symbolic.
Symbolic.
But I also want to emphasize that if you happen to be somebody who doesn't like oysters, that's not the aphrodisiac for you. We have to not ruin the whole idea if you say, I guess I have to eat an oyster. No, you don't.
No, that's right. But oysters, which happen to be low in fat and loaded with zinc, turns out they're great for testosterone production and great for the brain because of that. And I also like the little bit of history that Casanova ate 50 raw oysters every morning. And he was reputed to have had quite an active, robust sex life.
And he did impute it to the oysters. He definitely did.
Yeah, that's right. You probably had some fun doing the research for this book.
Oh, it was fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fascinating.
Yeah. And then we have chocolate. And we know that chocolate has contains PEA, a substance that stimulates the same reaction as falling in love. And then, again, history. The Aztec ruler Montezuma reportedly drank 50 cups of chocolate a day to, what, to better serve his harem of 600 women.
Exactly.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, and again, we're back to, he probably believed it definitely was working for him.
Yes, so there is that, in the whole field of aphrodisiacs, there is, of course, the placebo effect. Can you talk about that, Linda?
Right. You know, this is actually something I'm pretty passionate about, because I got a little irritated when or frustrated when people would say, oh, it's just placebo effect. Oh, you mean it's all in your mind. And it led me, in my searches, to discover that no less than Harvard University has a center for placebo studies that I think is probably at this point almost 20 years old, 15 years, something like that. Really, 21st century stuff.
Mm-hmm,
but the whole purpose of their research on so-called placebos is to exactly study this issue. Is it, quote-unquote, all in the mind or not? And what they found out that that's not an accurate picture. What we call placebo is, yes, it's something that as a result of your believing in it, there are physiological changes that take place in your mind and in your body that are actually measurable. And so it is not as if, oh, it was just in the mind, as if the mind were some thing that was apart from your physiology, which, as you know, it isn't. And I just found that fascinating. And I even liked to remind people, I mean, I happen to believe that a fair amount of the effectiveness of Viagra is placebo effect. Now, I'm aware that the clinical trials were run and that people did better. The men did better. They actually got their Viagra. But I suspect you have had clients, and I certainly have, where the man was already cleared for physiological, you know, malfunction with regard to erection problems, and Viagra was not effective. Or a really curious case I had, where Viagra was not effective with the man's wife. But, oh, it was working brilliantly with his clandestine lover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a mistake to think the magic pill is there, you know, without talking about mind over matter.
Mm-hmm.
And on a more negative twist, some of us know of cases where there's a word that exists that's the opposite of placebo. It's called nocebo.
Nocebo,
the power of the mind to cause negative things to happen in your body. The most intense example one can give of that are certain people who have beliefs such as voodoo. Okay, in voodoo, there is a belief that somebody can put a hex on you.
Mm-hmm.
And there are documented cases of people who died within 8 hours of believing that somebody had put a hex on them. And they did not have some
right.
chronic
illness. That's fascinating and disturbing,
both. So from my perspective, if that's true, then placebo, what we are calling placebo, those foods can come, especially, it does help, of course, if you have a positive expectation. I'm going to eat this yummy, juicy food because it's going to make my sexual experience really all the better.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, it's going to happen. And physiological things happened that facilitated all of that.
So it's so important when a couple, for example, might be preparing some aphrodisiac foods, using your book, which is just an incredible book, because it's also simple. They're not complicated recipes. So you have these couples that are getting together, and they've looked through the book, and they're planning to have a great aphrodisiac meal.
Right.
And, yeah. And so they're setting the scene. They're slowing down. And because they're slowing down and setting the scene and talking to each other and being together, because I've recommended to some of my low desire couples, as I'm sure you have, that it can really be helpful to suggest that they might do this. They might cook together and sort of build the expectation that they're going to have a fun, sexy time. Can you expand on that?
Right. Yes, because it's intimate. It's when you're in the kitchen and casually, and you're collaborative. You cut the onions, I'll do the this. And it can also be very interactive, you know. Do you think I should use this one or that one, you know, or how much do you want me to put in? I personally believe, although I'm aware that more and more there's actually men who are the primary cooks in the family and not the woman, is, you know, the more traditional view. But if you have a couple where one is more the cook than the other, for all of that cook loves to cook or feels the need to, the minute you bring in the other person, I think it takes the load off the so-called primary cook to have somebody working with you. And again, there's all sorts of couples. There's couples where both people are passionate about cooking already, and that's great. But it just balances things out a little bit better, I think. And for that matter, the person that didn't think they knew how to cook starts learning a few things. Or you always give choices. You don't say, you have to do this. You say, so I was thinking maybe you could do this or that. And you inspire them to try something maybe that they've never done before that actually interests them.
And that can improve sort of negotiating all of that. That can help the couple improve their communication. And I know as a sex therapist, that so many couples really need some help with sexual communication. They're awkward, and they just don't know what to say. They don't have the words. And, of course, that's one of the advantages of seeing a sex therapist, is that she can provide language for this. The communication part is really, really important. What else is important in preparing an aphrodisiac meal? We've got the couple together. They're communicating. They're having fun. They're maybe laughing. Maybe they're not wearing much. Let's talk about what she might wear for this experience.
Well, you know, there's different philosophies about this. And in fact, I was just reading about a fellow sex therapist, I think we know, Lou Ann Weston, who encouraged women, the little dainty teddy is great, but do we dare say the average woman may not look wonderful in one or feel wonderful in one, you know, may feel self-conscious. Whatever the sexy clothes are, the woman needs to feel comfortable in it and personally feel, you know, sensual in it, So this could range from, I don't know, Weston's suggestion was that maybe she ought to have a little bit more on, that she could sort of peel off the layers. As
I like that idea, yeah.
I mean, that's one approach. If you're literally cooking, a part of me has coined the term, let's undress for dinner, which I'm aware, if you're not wearing a lot, you can't ruin your clothes. That's just my personal philosophy a little bit. Yeah. But I mean, I know that you already know this, but I am a huge fan of sarongs, or what other people call pareo.
Yes, you are. So let's expand on that.
And I don't sell any yet, but boy, I'll tell you, I have long thought this would be the item I would want to add to my website. Because the thing about a sarong is, for starters, you know, you're bare-shouldered. So being bare-shouldered is, I don't know, there's a certain allure about that. And you can, you know, to be more conservative and maybe more provocative, if it's tied just above the breasts, you know, it's very suggestive. It's very flowing. The colors are wonderful. I have just recently moved and had an assistant helping me, you know, reorganize. So I can tell you that at this moment, I have two drawers full of rolled up sarongs. I must own 20 or 25, which is over the
top. Wow, that's impressive, but, Linda.
But you know what I'm loving about it? They used to sit in a place where they didn't get worn as much because they couldn't be found. I find myself wearing a different sarong every day, which has been a lot of fun.
And I think your lover appreciates it.
Oh, yes, he does. He comments a lot. And the catch is they're not that expensive. You can have I have several that are silk. They're sort of for special occasions. The point is, I don't care what your body type is, women look attractive in sarongs because, you know, you're getting to camouflage a few things. They're very feminine. They're flowy.
Yep.
And it could, if you wanted to be more daring, you could go topless and tie it around your waist.
Right.
If you need a few more clothes on, I mean, it's not the Western approach. It's my approach. You know, once it's off, it's off. But I happen to think that's, for me, that's an advantage. Or you could have on sexy underwear. You know, that would be your one addition that you might have just for the heck of it. And I'm personally, I don't have my sleeves. I love cooking in a sarong. That's all.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I do. I think maybe it has to do with you don't have sleeves on. We're back.
Yeah.
You know, you want to mess up what you're wearing or it gets in the way and it's not there.
But doesn't the sarong become untied sometimes? But maybe that's fun.
Well, I usually keep it tied until we sit down for dinner.
Yeah, okay.
No, it's just on, and it's just, it's a personal thing, but it's very comfortable for me. Now, I also realize it happens to be summertime, and it's warmer. You know, this might not work out so well in the winter, but maybe one could come up with something that's, you know, maybe you could wear something over a sarong, or I'm not sure what could work equally well in colder months. But
men tend to be quite visual. So, I mean, and I think women are learning to be more so too, but men tend to be more visual. So if they see their lovely lady cooking this aphrodisiac meal or maybe bringing him into it and she's wearing a sexy sarong, that's going to start with the arousal right there, the visual.
Well, and I mean, notice many men are not breast men, but many are. So you can certainly see how it's easy. It's very easy to walk up behind the chef and put one's hands on her breasts or any part of her body, actually.
That's right.
It just lends itself. But if for other people, I mean, if one is the type that's very comfortable in a lacy bra or something else, I come back to the thing of it has to be something that she feels sexy in, that makes her feel good about herself. And, of course, you probably said this, but it's in my other book, that it can be nice for people to go shopping together and talk about picking clothes. What do you think makes me look hot?
That's a good idea.
This works for both sexes, by the way. You know, not just women, but getting we're obviously talking heterosexual right now, but it doesn't matter whether we're talking gay, lesbian, pan, or whatever. You know, whomever one's lover is, you know, go find stuff that has allure.
Yeah, it's going to really help, isn't it?
I think so.
With the attraction, with getting the arousal going, and you know, I think some foods, as you're cooking, immediately pique desire because of their wonderfully sensual quality, and we've touched on that a little bit already with figs. Have we talked about figs yet? Maybe not. But I always think of fig.
No, we have not talked about figs. And now, figs are not known. I mean, they have a huge aphrodisiac lore. But I don't think the average American runs around saying, oh, yeah, you meant figs. yes, figs. I'm looking at my own materials here, you know, based on the so-called doctrine of similarity or resemblances, they can allude to both male and female parts.
That's what I understand.
One of the few, right. And, you know, you have, I mean, it's sort of pathetic, but in the biblical Garden of Eden, you know, it was a fig leaf that was used to cover the genitals.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then in ancient Greece, this fruit was one of the sacred foods associated with fertility and physical love. And in China, it was given to sweethearts. And in Europe, it was considered an aphrodisiac because of its shape and color, which you're talking about. In some places, female genitals are called figs. You know that?
Yes.
Yeah. While in other parts of the world, fig is a term for homosexuals. It's got a lot of meanings, fig, which is now in season. It's a fresh fig is just delicious. And you can take your time, just like with a grape, eating the fig and feeding it to your lover.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of recipes in my book, I do have an amazing, simple dessert that's basically figs and honey.
Figs and honey, right.
Figs and honey and a little, I think I have a little bit of creme de cassis. Actually, it's a honey lemon. I'm sorry, I've looked at the wrong recipe. I have integrated, I forgot, some strawberries and figs with whipping cream as well as the honey. So that's...
And honey is considered an aphrodisiac too, so you've got a whole bunch of stuff going there.
Yep. Yeah. Really, they are lovely. And, you know, in a way, they're a special treat too because, you know, they're not available year-round. So you pick... kinds of things, you know, like when they do come into season, it's a special treat.
A very special treat. So talk about, because you do in your book, when you're setting the scene, and you're cooking together, how you eat.
Well, where you eat. Well, yes, I think people should pick more unusual places. Fine, you know, there are dining rooms, but you can, depending on where you live, you might consider a backyard picnic meal. If you have enough privacy, that works for some people. I think you can take something and put it on the floor. I'm thinking about a sensual throw that you might put on the floor. And that becomes your sort of special venue. You're not using chairs. You're just sitting there.
Almost like an inside picnic.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one could do the same thing on one's bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you want the whole environment, you know, are there candles that are lit? Or I also am a believer in colored light bulbs, you know, obviously.
Oh, yeah, red. Me too. That's right.
And they're super safe. Sometimes people worry about candles and, you know, their safety. Light bulbs take care of that whole issue.
Lead candles now we've got. They make a flame that looks quite real.
Yes.
Have you tried the LED candles that are run by by batteries? Yeah.
Right. Actually, that's a very cool idea. And music, we haven't talked about music yet.
Well, let's talk about music, because that's so important.
So and hopefully people are on the same page about the kind of music that they like.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be in the background, certainly not too loud. This is a personal bias. I tend to prefer, for erotic settings or sensual settings, I prefer nonverbal music, but lots of people do want lyrics. So, you know, again, you pick your personal favorite.
Yeah.
With regard to that. And the food itself, it depends on whether the food is hot or cold, whether you're getting, the olfactory element from the food. If your foods are colder and possibly you're not getting it, then, you know, adding whether it's, what do they call it? The sticks. You know, the sticks, what do you call those? I don't mean incense. I mean the things you... that you buy.
I'm not sure what
oil,
you mean.
The oil is in the bottle, and they emit smell.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever they are, my perspective, they're not as cloying as incense would be. So they can be very pleasant. Or you do two things in one. The candle is a scented candle, and you get your smell that way.
All right.
That's all part of the setting the stage. And we've talked about eating with your fingers and not bothering with silver or anything of that sort. But another tweak would be, for example, we have some very special wine glasses. It's sort of nice to bring out the really nice stuff, or the things that are really sensually shaped.
Yes.
I can be an addition as well.
Of course. So how you eat, the sounds, the sights, the smell, And of course, and this is your language, how you yes. feel about your lover is the most Bingo. Important aspect of such a meal. Of course it is.
Right. You know, we can't, nothing else is going to trump that. Yeah, so you have to be feeling good about your partner, and hopefully whether you've made the meal together, we also have to talk about the fact that, at least based on my survey data, people really loved surprise meals. And by virtue of being a surprise meal, it was that one person had planned it. And the trick to that, and the other person was none the wiser. The trick to that, though, is that the person, you know, both parties kind of need to feel very okay about that. And maybe the one that prepares the meal has said, come home hungry, I was thinking of doing something kind of special tonight. But doesn't have to allude to the fact that it was going to be a beautiful setup and so forth. So that's kind of the other aspect of feeling good about your partner, because certainly if a meal is made for you, I think one's going to already be feeling, wow, somebody's gone to a lot of effort for me.
Exactly. And I think for most women, no aphrodisiac takes effect without affection.
Of course. And, of course.
Yeah, which carried to perfection becomes right. love.
And, you know, just yes. speaking to that, I saw a couple just several days ago. I hate to use the word role reversal, but the presenting issue was the man's low sex drive. And he was in his mid-40s, she was in her late 30s, so there wasn't some huge age disparity here, age issue. Neither of them had any major medical issues. But this is sort of how people should not enter therapy. The woman had booked the appointment. She said her husband was willing to come, but she then sent me a 4-paragraph email prior to this is session number one, sort of, this is the way I see things and all of this stuff. And, you know, that's just not okay. And when the two of them arrived, I kind of gently said, I got this email. You need to know your wife sent me something, which in the future, both of you should not do that. But I turned to him and I said to him, what do you think is the problem? Remember, this is a man, this is a woman who's saying, we've only had sex twice in the last 6 months. And it was on, she provides the exact dates, etc. Mm. And he says, well, our communication is terrible, and I don't feel loved.
Oh.
Well, no kidding. And the yeah. bad thing was that even after a whole session, every time I started to bring up, let's talk about improving your communication. But I came here to talk about sex. So it was sort of astounding to me, but it very much demonstrated it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. This matters. We're not going to get anywhere if you're not feeling connected to your partner.
Absolutely.
And
it's, well, if we bring in attachment theory, it's all about closing emotional distance.
Right.
That we want a partner who is available to us, will listen to us, will pay attention to us,
right.
and be responsive, and then not only available, but be responsive. So,
right.
Yeah. So I get cases like that, too, of course. But that was very vulnerable of the guy to say, I don't feel loved.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was quite. It was poignant. That's right.
Yeah. poignant moments are special. Mm-hmm. And you and I have both been in the field over 30 years, and speaking for myself, it has to do with my staying in it and not wanting to retire is that it is deeply satisfying to help individuals, because I have some individuals too, but also couples, and it's just so deeply satisfying to help them.
Right. No, and I feel the same way. And as you
know
I'm also teaching still. And
yes.
So it's really kind of remarkable that even at the graduate level, so many, you know, therapists in training really need to get a better handle on sexuality and comfort with
it. Oh, yes.
And, I'm always somewhat surprised about how, I mean, it sounds weird, but I am really making a contribution, if, you know, to their education.
Of course you are. It doesn't sound weird at all. Of course you are.
Yeah.
You're making a difference in these people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And I, you know, we know that it's important for successful aging to continue to feel necessary and useful. And you and I are in a profession where you don't age out. And in fact, our experience, our wisdom is appreciated.
Exactly.
And so it's a very, I so appreciate my profession as a marriage and family therapist and as a sex therapist and you as a psychologist and as a sex therapist. Isn't it wonderful to feel useful and that you're making a difference for people? And that's what keeps us in, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I know you didn't bring it up where you wanted perhaps a little dabble into a topic that I'm not terribly familiar with, but know a little bit about, or I just wanted to mention the pertinence of the fact that, as I said, I've moved recently, and I am now in, I believe, it's the largest in California. I believe it may be second largest in the country. Retirement community, which is 55. It's 55 plus. It's not like it's 75 plus, you know. But I'm very active in the tennis group, and the whole philosophy. Laguna Woods was actually featured on 60 Minutes about 4 or 5 years ago. And even though I already knew about it, it really caught my attention that if you want to, you know, stay thriving throughout your whole life, it's really important to be in an environment that offers all sorts of activities and you can follow pursuits that you have. But one of the things that particularly caught my partner Dennis's attention was the fact that of the over 200 clubs, there's a cannabis club. Although we suddenly found out that 6 months ago or so, because of somebody on the board of the cannabis club was sort of selling stuff on the side to somebody outside of the community or whatever, that they had to dissolve. But it really highlighted the mindset of the kind of people that live here, that they were forward-thinking. And since cannabis is legal now, you know, maybe there are all sorts of benefits. And you had posed the question, I don't personally have experience cooking with cannabis, but your question was, could it serve as an aphrodisiac or not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think my answer is going to be, it probably does in some cases. And I want to hasten to say that I've worked with a couple of clients where... Is that on your end? I don't think it's my end.
I'm sorry, it is. Yeah, I live in the city. I don't have Laguna Woods. Quiet. But yes, so you can see that it is an aphrodisiac in some cases, as do I see that.
Yeah, and so I have worked with a couple of clients where marijuana use was problematic. And it was, and it was sort of heavy use, and it was, you know, lowering a man's testosterone level and blah, blah, blah. But as, you know, as it is legalized and become, you know, there's much more available to know about it, there, you know, first off, there's different strains of marijuana. And the edibles, for example, on average, involve a form of cannabis that's called cannabis indica, and it tends to be associated with relaxing people. Now, if it's going to relax you so much that you fall asleep, this is not going to work out too well sexually.
Right.
But on the other hand, if we're talking about some people who have a little bit of, for whatever reasons, they have a little bit of an anxious edge, it's possible. It's possible. I'm actually thinking more recently of somebody I know socially, but not as a client, who takes it, who loves chocolate mint. It's chocolate mints that are laced with marijuana, and it mellows this person. Now,
it's pretty common, actually, in my experience.
Say that again. Common?
It's pretty common in my experience, because I do use cannabis, too, with certain couples where inhibitions are lowered, with edibles mainly, because a lot of the women don't. And I always say, you know, if you get a 10-milligram edible, break it in half. You've got to start slow. Start low and go slow.
And the other thing that occurred to me, although this other person is using it more for
Linda, that's the music. I'm so sorry. We're going to continue this conversation, though.
Okay.
You're back on.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Telefonerai probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore. Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?
Ai tuoi piedi, ta 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 ta.